Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Glad Tidings, the Athletic's Everton Football Club podcast. I'm Greg O'Keefe and I'm joined by my colleague and fellow Everton correspondent, Paddy Boyland, with our festive special and our last podcast before the new year. So, plenty to talk about and plenty of positives to talk about. Before we get stuck into that, a little bit of information about one of the best gifts you can give this Christmas. If you subscribe to Athletic, you can give another subscription for free. It's a great present for any football fan this Christmas, as I say. You can enjoy all our great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. So say hello to 2021 by sharing the gift of the Athletic's unrivaled football coverage for the whole year. It's the perfect present for yourself and someone else. Just go to theathletic.com/EvertonPod. That's theathletic.com/EvertonPod. From pod to pad, how are you, Mr. Boyland?
I'm good, yeah. It's always a little bit manic at this time of year, isn't it? With the games coming thick and fast and trying to keep the site occupied and trying to get things in the bag, match coverage, all these kinds of things, but made an awful lot easier and an awful lot better when Everton are picking up again and getting some wins under the belt. So yeah, looking forward to talking for once about back-to-back Everton victories. Some good, really, really good signs, some promising signs, and different kinds of performances, I think, to what we've come to expect from Ancelotti's Everton this season. Yeah, really, really positive stuff.
Doesn't everything feel just that much easier and better and brighter when Everton are winning it? Well, let's start with the win on Wednesday evening at the King Power Stadium, Pat. 2-0 win. I don't think many sort of people expected, just like they didn't probably expect Everton to beat Chelsea on Saturday. But they did. And there's something about the recalibration that Carlo Ancelotti has delivered in the absence of just so many key players. And then another one going early in the game in Alan last night, which for me underlines what we already know about his pedigree as a manager. But, you know, how, as you hinted, Everton have found a way to win that's different from what we've seen, but very, very effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the wins over Chelsea and Leicester were a testament to that. I mean, you only have to look at the fact that I think both sides before the game, the respective games, could have gone top to see what kind of form Leicester and Chelsea were both in. So that tells you an awful lot about the scale of the task that awaited Everton. But I think what's been most impressive in this run is that Everton have had to find a different way to get points on the board, win matches, in the absence of some really key players, like you say. And we only spoke on the last podcast about how there needed to be this move towards a 4-3-3 or a variation of 4-3-3. As it turns out, it's 4-2-3-1, I think. But Ancelotti's almost learned a few lessons, I feel. And Everton have come out kind of significantly stronger the other side. And you look at it and think to yourself, if Everton can win with this team missing these players against such good opposition, then it does bode well. I don't know about you, but it almost feels as though we found a different way of playing, another formula. And we've become kind of so used to watching Everton in the early part of the season blowing sides away with expansive football and James playing those lovely diagonals into Richarlison and Luca Dean, Calvert-Lewin poaching around the box. There was a free-flowing and expansion to that play that free-flowing style and expansive nature to that play that I think was really easy on the eye and meant that even when they were conceding goals, they just looked like they were going to score four or five every single time. And
yeah,
they obviously dropped off. I don't think you can do that as Everton over the course of a whole season, and you certainly can't without the players they're missing currently. And we had this little interim period, it felt to me, this little interim period against probably post-derby all the way up to 30 minutes into the Burnley game at Turf Moor, where Ancelotti was almost looking for a new formula. He knew he'd have to do something slightly different.
Yeah.
But go closer to what had given Everton so much success earlier in the season. Quite obvious 3-4-3 wasn't working. Three at the back wasn't a system that the players were used to playing, and they struggled a little bit there. And a little bit back to basics, it feels, a little bit back to basics. And back four, players all knowing their roles, counter-attacking in the main and looking to score goals off set pieces and counter-attacks. And it served them really, really well. So if the question was, how do Everton play without James and without Luca Dean and Seamus Coleman, before Burnley, I'd have said, to be honest, I don't know, but whatever's happening isn't working. Now I think we can say there is a way forward without those guys. There is a way that Everton can play. Maybe a blueprint against your top four, five, six sides in the league, particularly away from home, where you're not going to have much of the ball, where Everton are able to get loads of success. And that's been the story for me. I've really, really enjoyed watching players filling in and mucking in and fighting for each other, battling to win the ball, and these kind of really committed team performances that almost hark back to the David Moyes era, dare I say it.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Classic Everton, isn't it?
It is. And particularly, I would say, the game against Chelsea, where the spirit of the fans as well, it must be said, but the spirit of the fans just seemed to take the players up a gear, and they just did the basics so well, to the point where Chelsea were just starved of what I would consider to be any real clear-cut chances in that match. Leicester, apart from one Jamie Vardy chance, you'd arguably say the same. So a reversion to kind of the basics of football, but still playing some nice stuff at times and still scoring some good goals. And like I say, it feels like there's a new formula here, and I think that bodes incredibly well for Everton moving forward this season.
Well, I agree. It does. In some ways, I think we'll test Ancelotti, but I'll come back to that. One way that I think just to build on what you were saying, I think that the solidity has been achieved is coming back to a back four. And Michael Keane, I know we're both an admirer of Michael Keane, has been absolutely immense in that. In fact, he's been absolutely immense, as you wrote, back in June now. Doesn't seem that long ago, does it? Since the restart, I know you and I were chatting last night while we were watching the game, and I was doing my piece, and you came up with a cracking stat about the amount of passes that he now attempts from the 23 site, and it's doubled, isn't it, or approximately doubled. He's
more or less.
Which would indicate to me, this added confidence on the ball, but it's warranted because he's careful with the ball, and he's accurate, and he's calm. And that bleeds into everything he's doing for me at the moment. He's metronomic in the air. He wins everything. And I struggle to remember. I mean, I'm sure there have been, but in a long time, I haven't seen a player transform his fortunes from someone who could really have gone either way but felt like a bit of a flop for what Everton paid, £25 million back in 2017, to someone now that I could see, no matter what the chopping and changing is in the centre, I can see them building a team around him. And I would be surprised if the time comes that Seamus Coleman retires, if he wasn't really in the shout to be the next club captain too.
Yeah, well, it's something we've written before as well. We know there are a few lads, Michael Keane, Mason Holgate, Luca Dean, that have aspirations of being Everton captain one day. And Keane, even if he's not got the armband, has wanted to develop as a leader. I think we are starting to see that now, and maybe we've seen it since lockdown and Project Restart. But I think there's a good case here that, kind of under the radar at times, he's become Everton's best central defender in that period, maybe from 2020 on.
Absolutely.
Start of 2020 on. Almost kind of faultless. I'm struggling, like you, to remember too many rickets in his game. And I think the big improvement, first and foremost, is in his confidence levels. There was a time where he was seen as kind of the ultimate confidence player. And if he made a mistake or one of his teammates made a mistake, it maybe took him a while to recover. What I think you get now is somebody that's so composed and so confident, both in what he can do and what he's being entrusted to do by the manager, that he's able to kind of overcome those hurdles now, those maybe those mental hurdles in his game. You wrote in your piece from Leicester, and I've written before that during lockdown he kind of went away and worked with his former youth team coach at Manchester United, Paul McGuinness, and they worked on the kind of the basics of defending. It was almost like I need to go back to basics here, work on my movement, work on my positioning, work on my footwork. And he almost looks half a yard quicker now. Maybe that's just my imagination. But the days of seeing him turn slow, a little bit like a tugboat, and getting outpaced, seem to be over to an extent. And most of his defensive work is really, really good. I think he's the pillar at the moment of that central defence. I think he's the one where you maybe look at him and go, it's Michael Keane plus one other. Mm. And maybe at times last season it was Mason Holgate plus one other. Mm. But I think he's the stalwart in there now. He's the one that's organising that defence. Very good in the air, like you say. Has got better across the ground with his positioning and his movement, thanks to the work he did with Paul McGuinness over Zoom, the training work. And we've seen his confidence bit by bit grow. And I don't know if you remember the Crystal Palace game, but he's striding out from the back with the ball, spraying passes around in the build-up to goals and in the build-up to kind of important moves for Everton. Against West Ham in the Carabao Cup, there's a lovely flight of ball over the top, which Calvert-Lewin latches onto and scores from. And I think it's symptomatic of a player that's really grown under Ancelotti's tutelage. My question would be, has he improved the most of any player under Ancelotti's watch? I think it comes down to, basically for me, it's a straight shootout between him and Calvert-Lewin. That would be my question, because I think the extent of his improvement has really been quite stark.
No, I totally agree. It's a tough call. I suppose the most tangible and headline grabbing improvements have been to the younger man with Calvert-Lewin, with just the sheer transformation in his goal return and just ability to lead the line and everything else in terms of his ability to be I'd say world class, but I suppose he is. He's playing for England at the moment. Certainly one of the best young centre forwards in the Premier League, let's say, if not in Europe. But Keane, nevertheless, I can see why it's neck and neck. Someone else who's improved, albeit in a very much condensed period, and albeit that, you know, there was never particularly any down period where we doubted him because he's so new, is Ben Godfrey. The lad hasn't really played in his proper position since he joined. He's been all over the sort of back four. He's been right back. He's been now recently left back. I'm blown away by him, to be honest, especially against Chelsea. I see, which I didn't, you know, I wasn't, didn't know much about him at Norwich. You know, our colleagues spoke very highly of him, Michael Bailey. But I see a player there that has been a fantastic bit of recruitment and could well go on to be a really top player and an England international. Again at left back last night, he's got the pace, he's got the tenacity, the reading of the game. Has he surprised you how quickly he's developed?
Well, it's interesting actually, because I tweeted from Ancelotti's pre-Leicester press conference, and Ancelotti said something along the lines of, he's really surprised me in relation to Ben Godfrey. And I had loads of kind of quite sarky responses back, saying things along the lines of, oh, it's great that he's surprised, isn't it? Don't we do our due diligence on players? And I don't think Ancelotti meant he surprised me. He's a much better player than I gave him credit for before he joined. I think what he was saying was, he surprised me in this context, in this situation, in these roles that he's had to play. And looking at it, since he came in, He was a centre-back at Norwich, but here he's already played as a right-back against Southampton, as part of a three in the centre against Fulham and others, at left-back now numerous times. And yeah, it's not been perfect. He's given away things here and there. But that's a really tough ask for still a young player in Godfrey, who's still learning his craft a little bit. It's a really tough task to come into the side and perform like he has done in the main. And I think he's another one for me. He's grown and grown and grown and really hasn't looked out of place at left back. What I loved about the performance against Chelsea was they were defending quite wide, Holgate and Godfrey. And they were very much, let's keep it tight, let's keep the distance between the back four kind of relatively minimal so that Chelsea can't play through us. But as soon as the ball went out to the Chelsea wide players, Holgate and Godfrey were like a pair of sprinters on the blocks, ready to go, ready to get right out there quickly using their pace to block off the crosses. And that's what Everton have done it so effectively for me, both against Chelsea, but also against Leicester. You consider that Chelsea started with Olivier Giroud up front, who's very good in the air. But Godfrey and Holgate and the rest of the side didn't really give him much of a sniff in that game. They've also been really good, both Godfrey and Holgate, alleviating pressure at times. I think they're both comfortable in possession, maybe Godfrey even more so than Holgate. And that's one of the attributes of Godfrey's game that I think excites Everton, his physicality, his speed, but also his ability to play out. What they've done so successfully, particularly against Chelsea, is just picking the ball up when Everton were under pressure and just motoring and just going and going and going down the line with the ball and getting Everton 40, 50, at times more, yards up the pitch. Fantastic runs from both of them against Chelsea. And at times he's almost like the road runner, isn't he? Godfrey, just so quick, so speedy. And what it boils down to for me is that Everton are paid 20 million initially, and maybe at one point they weren't necessarily going to go down that route, and they were kind of looking at loan players because they'd already spent most of their budget. But they decided to push the boat out for this lad, and they've decided to push the boat out on him for a reason, because they know that he's got a huge glass ceiling. And whatever else you say about the elements he needs to work on, the raw ingredients are great, aren't they? You've got a lad standing comfortably over 6 foot, so he's tall, got great physique, can play in a number of different positions if needs be, even though he's probably a centre-back long-term. Good passer of the ball, comfortable in possession, after spells in defensive midfield throughout his career. And just everything quick, strong, tackles well, does the basics on the whole pretty well, comfortable in the air. All those kinds of things, I think that they mean that Everton have got a player of real potential here, vast, vast potential. And I'm excited to see what he does now, because it's been a, particularly in the context of what he's had in front of him, I think it's been such an excellent start to his time at Goodison.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, the host of a special episode of Giant, produced by The Athletic. It's the story of Chester City's American dream. A dream that turned into a nightmare.
This is Terry Smith. He's coached teams to honours in England, Europe and the United States. One of football's most celebrated coaches. American football, that is. Now he wants to conquer another sport.
I think I've probably got more years of coaching experience than just about anyone.
But not in soccer.
Not in soccer.
Search for Giant on Spotify to listen to the full episode.
In terms of looking forward, of course, we've obviously got Arsenal at the weekend and then a big, big game in the Cup on the horizon. But let's just reflect on what we hope for in 2021 and in the Christmas period. Two wins has put Everton, as I'm sure every Blue knows, back right in the mix, fifth in the league, 23 points, only 5 points behind Liverpool, who obviously went top after beating Tottenham. And a whole 10 places above Arsenal. I don't think many people would have thought that when we were looking at the period when both clubs changed managers almost a year ago, and there was a bit of synergy there with, you know, Arteta and Ancelotti, and even people suggesting that either or would have taken over. Can we make it three wins in a row on Saturday? And beyond that, you know, what are we hoping for in the new year? I have to say now, I have to keep resetting where I think Everton, are aiming for, but it still for me falls on the absolute must, which is to throw all the strongest planning, all the strongest lineup, everything into the cup competitions, and specifically the one that's right in front of them in the League Cup. That's always going to be my priority, and I know Ancelotti has spoken very compellingly about, you know, the League Cup and the Carabao Cup. So if he was going to rotate, it's tough because you see the league table opening up, but I would say rotate for Arsenal and then see, you know, and then get that team as strong as you think it has to be for the following game. But he also has a headache even with how you fit James Rodriguez back in.
Yeah.
You'll be doing the game on Saturday. What do you think of that and then beyond?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a given, and we're still awaiting team news for that game. I don't think it's a given that James Rodriguez is 100% fit to face Arsenal. Certainly when Ancelotti spoke to us before the Leicester game, there appeared to be an element of doubt in my mind, and that there was in his mind too, I should say. So let's see how that goes. He's going to be assessed individually. He's obviously back in training to an extent. Largely individual work, running and gym and kind of light work with the ball. But there's a process. He needs to step it up. He needs to get back in contact training with the rest of the squad. It's a headache for Ancelotti, but it's a good headache to have, isn't it? Because you come off the back of a couple of wins and people have put their hands up for selection. Given that this has been a winning team, I wouldn't be tempted to change too much. I'd keep things more or less as they are, and that's in terms of the system and the personnel. But I just wonder if we're getting towards a period now where Alex Iwobi is doing so well on the right and providing so much cover as well for whoever's at right back, that it almost becomes Iwobi on the right in this 4-2-3-1, and then it's Gylfi or James for the number 10 role. And I think the number 10 role probably could benefit James. So that's one thing I would wonder about. Certainly if Seamus Coleman's not back, although I think there is a chance that he'll play against, there is some chance he'll play against Arsenal. That's one to keep an eye out for. In terms of other wishes for 2020, silverware, like you say, more than anything else, I think. Silverware, I think, has got to be something that we're aiming for after that long, barren, trophyless run.
Absolutely got to be.
I think so. I think so. I mean, if you said to me now Everton can finish fifth and won't win a trophy, or Everton can finish eighth and win a trophy, I'd take the latter option. Well, I don't know about you.
It's 100% the same. You know, yeah, so in a heartbeat, especially if eighth. Well, obviously, winning a trophy would get you into the Europa League, wouldn't it? So there's just no debate for me.
Yeah, I don't think there's a debate either. So I think it's got to be taken. Yeah, it becomes tougher if the decision is between finishing fourth and, say, winning a cup, which one you prioritise, because Everton don't have the biggest squad in the world, it must be said. But that would be one of my targets. And then the other thing on my wish list, which is a slightly shorter-term thing, hopefully, is the quick and speedy return of Alan after he picked up his hamstring injury against Leicester. I thought he was magnificent in the opening however long he was on the pitch, probably about half an hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Absolutely magnificent, both in terms of winning the ball back, but also in some of the passes he was playing, particularly out to Richarlison and Iwobi on the wing. So, thankfully for Everton, Doucouré mucked in. I put a stat on Twitter earlier today where I wrote that according to Opta, Doucouré this is made 15 ball recoveries against Leicester, kind of assuming Alan's mantle, and no Everton player has managed more in a league game this season, so that shows you how much defensive work he got through. You'd obviously rather have Alan back than not, because I think he's pivotal to the way Everton play, but it's nice that they've got somebody in Doucouré who can at least look to do some of the same things. So yeah, the other wish would be to get Alan back, despite how magnificent Doucouré was as well, because I think if Alan was the best player on the pitch from 0 to 40 or whenever he went off, Doucouré was the best player in the pitch from 40 and Alan going off right the way through to full time. He just seemed to be everywhere, just seemed to be winning those tackles, pushing Everton up the pitch with simple but effective distribution. And maybe that was his best performance. Maybe that was his best display in an Everton shirt alongside Brighton, because he was just, like I say, absolutely everywhere. So, yeah, I think you've got to, despite Alan's injury, you've got to be positive. You've got to look at this run and say Everton are only 2 points ahead of Arsenal. They're only 2 points off second place in the Premier League table. So there's a chance, as ever in this league, particularly this season, if you start to accumulate wins in quick succession, then you can very quickly put yourself right in the fray for all manner of things. And this is the season for that. So let's hope they can continue to target wins. Arsenal is a game they can win. And I think, putting my neck on the line, they should win. If they've got aspirations of being in the top four, that's Ancelotti's aim. But there's also an eye on that Wednesday night game against Manchester United at Goodison, which should well be a cracker as well.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Touching again on the dilemma over James Rodriguez, you know, he's clearly Everton's arguably one of the league's best technical players. He's able to conjure something out of nothing. You know, he can create chances seemingly at will. A tight game, he'll open up. But at the same token, the sort of the flip side of him is that whatever way you look at it, as he's being deployed at the moment, and Carlo Ancelotti has quite plainly said he's given him this remit, you know, he doesn't expect defensive work from him, it leaves the fullback virtually whenever a team can get the ball back from Everton, when Everton are attacking and get it in transition, it's 2v1 all the time. Yeah. And whoever the fullback is, that's going to be very, very, very difficult. And it's going to leave Everton conceding a lot more chances than they have done in the last two games.
Absolutely.
What you do, I mean, do you have to find a new role for him? Because why would you? It's an absolute match. This is why Ancelotti really is. I know it's something that's going to really sort of absorb him too, because he's obviously been fundamental in getting Rodriguez here. Rodriguez certainly hasn't come to not be in the team. But what you do?
This is why I mentioned the idea of maybe James and Sigurdsson dovetailing in that number 10 role. Because I think it affords him slightly less defensive responsibility,
Yeah, but Sigurdsson works still a lot harder than him, though, and Sigurdsson got through a lot of work in the last two games. I take your point, absolutely.
Sigurdsson's been good, and I think if he were to be dropped for anyone at the moment, he could make a case that he's being hard done to. I totally agree. I love the way he stepped up and took responsibility for the penalty in a difficult moment, actually, with Richarlison. Kept his head, rolled it in, really cool. I think that goes for him. He was obviously captain that day as well. I thought his performance was pretty understated against Leicester, but good on the whole. Got through a lot of work and made some good passes. So he would be harshly done to if he's dropped. But that number 10 role, that is a role I do see personally. This is me, not of Carlo Ancelotti, obviously. That's a role I see him filling effectively if he's given the opportunity, and it's a role I think they should look to deploy him in, because like you say, if he plays out on the right, he doesn't afford quite the same protection that somebody like a Iwobi or a Richarlison would do. And I think Everton's balance is really nice in those wide areas at the moment. Iwobi's kicked on, he looks much more he's got much more confidence about his game. He's beaten players on the ball, dribbling really well at a really high success rate, making forward passes, getting crosses into the box with varying success, it must be said. So I would not shift either of those two wide players out of their positions. And I'd say to James, your role then is to play as a number 10 and compete with Sigurdsson for that number 10 role. Now, the reason I say it's not a bad headache to have is because Everton don't beat Leicester necessarily with James playing on the right wing. It's not a given, because he doesn't get through the same amount of work. I think you've got to play a slightly different way with James, and maybe they don't beat Leicester in the way they did, if I'm going to qualify it a bit further. Equally, Everton don't beat Brighton and the various other sides that they thumped earlier in the season without James playing the way he did.
That's a good point.
Playing the way they did. If you're going to have... I think Everton had about 30% possession against Chelsea, where James becomes almost redundant. And yes, he's better. He's about average defensively, according to the stats that I drew up for my piece on him last week on the site. But it doesn't make use if you're having 30% of the ball and keeping every man behind the ball in banks of four. It doesn't make sense to get the most out of him in that way. If you can have 70% of the ball and you're going to flip it, you can have 70, 65, 60% of possession, then I would suggest that the one player in this Everton squad that you want in the team is James Rodriguez. So it very much depends on the way you want to play the game. But having him as an option to either start or come off the bench is massive. He's got such quality on that left foot, and he's a big chance creator. He's one of the biggest chance creators in the league, one of the most prolific. So a good headache, I think, for Ancelotti to have. What I would say is that over this run of games, what Everton are playing, they've already played Leicester in midweek, but they've got Arsenal on Saturday, then Manchester United in midweek, then, so that's the 23rd against Manchester United, 26th against Sheffield United away, 28th against Manchester City at home. You're going to need a squad. So James will play games, Sigurdsson will play games, Iwobi will play games. Anthony Gordon might even play games, the lesser spotted Anthony Gordon, who knows. He might be needed even just for cameos off the bench. So I think there's an opportunity here for loads of players to stake a claim during this run. Ancelotti said he will rotate, and I think they're in a better position now to do so, given the way some of those, what you might call fringe players before, people like Iwobi, have performed during this run. I'm actually quite excited that we've seen extra glimpses of Everton's squad depth, which, in truth, I didn't really think was always there at times earlier this season.
We said about that, haven't we? Yeah. Well, exciting is certainly a nice note to end on. I'd just say thank you to everyone who's been listening throughout the year. It's been a tough one in many ways, but we've really enjoyed recording the podcast, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to it. Don't forget that you can subscribe to Athletic and give another subscription as a gift for free. Go on, be the big-hearted person at Christmas. It's a perfect present for any of your mates who love football. Enjoy this analysis and all the features, and get these pods ad-free. But don't forget, you can do that by going to theathletic.com/EvertonPod. Yeah, have a great Christmas. I'm sure, Pad, you wish the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks to everyone for listening. Echo what you say, and fingers crossed, 2021 is even better for both Everton and I think the world in general, if we're being frank.
Yeah, indeed. Well, once again, thank you very much. Up the Blues and see you on the other side.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.